This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome, listeners from around the world. Thank you so much for joining me. This is your host, Jason Hartman, and we are on episode number 723. Great to have you here today. We are going to have a fantastic market profile on the Quad Cities area, and our guest today will be at our event this weekend in Phoenix. So you can come and meet him personally there at our real estate technology, software, and buying event. And I think that'll be a great opportunity for you to meet him. So many of you have already, of course, registered for that event. But if you haven't, there are a couple of extra seats available. We were able to rearrange the room a little bit, and we're not going to have the tables we wanted in back because we want to make room for you, for visitors in the audience, to come on out and make sure we have a lot of room for you. So join us for that. Go to jasonhartman.com to register. And that is the information you need to know. Click on events, of course, and register for that. Also, check out some of our great educational products at hartmaneducation.com. And today, before we get to some of this important real estate material, as it affects and creates opportunities for us as real estate investors in good markets like this, I want to talk to you about a pressing national problem. Actually, maybe it's a pressing global problem. It's a big problem, and I've been meaning to talk to you about it before. And I don't know, maybe the reason I want to talk about it is purely cathartic. I just want to get it off my chest. I just want you to hear it. I want to vent a little bit. But it's not about Wall Street. It's about Main Street. And maybe the reason for me sharing this pressing problem with you is that you, as an activist listener, will rise up in your community and do something about it. Now, those of you regular listeners know that my general beliefs as they relate to society and politics are of a libertarian nature. God knows I'm going to be the last person to say there ought to be a law. But, you know, sometimes I just get fed up too. Look, I'm human. Don't claim to be anything else. Maybe there just ought to be a law about this pressing problem, pressing national problem, maybe a pressing global problem. You know, they did make a law about this in Los Angeles. Yes, I think it was back in the 90s in Los Angeles, California, my hometown, that is known for its ridiculously intrusive government. But maybe there ought to be a law nationwide. What do I speak of? What is this pressing national problem? What is this pressing global problem? Here it is. You ready for this? It's those damn leaf blowers. Yes, those damn leaf blowers have got to go. Now, I don't know about you, but a couple days a week, I wake up here in my neighborhood in Scottsdale, and there are these people with these leaf blowers, and they are polluting like crazy. Not in one way, not in two ways, but in three ways. Yes, of course, the epidemic of modern civilization, noise pollution. Yes, noise pollution, insidious noise pollution that is stressing us out, that is upsetting our beings and our animals, for that matter. Our animals are very upset by this noise. So that's the first form of pollution. Those little engines, why they have to be gas, I know why they're gas, because they're just more efficient than electric motors would be, but those gasoline engines have no emissions controls, they have no catalytic converters, and they pollute like crazy. You can smell the disgusting cancer-causing pollution a block and a half away as you're walking to, or hopefully away from, one of these rotten, disgusting leaf blowers. And the third form of pollution, they do nothing at all. They simply kick up dust and cause people to have to go get their car washed more often. They invade another person's property with their dust. They are the lazy man's way to, quote, clean, unquote. They're not clean at all. Leaf blowers have got to go. This has got to end. This is my rant. I know. I only rant occasionally. You know me, your host, who's very mellow and doesn't have an opinion about anything. But these damn leaf blowers have got to go. Folks, rise up in your community. Let your voice be heard. Leaf blowers have got to go. They are the scourge of modern society. Okay, Wall Street is bad too. They're a bunch of crooks. Wall Street, the modern version of organized crime. You've heard me rant on that many times before. You've heard me rant on the Federal Reserve. But today, yeah, leaf blowers. They've got to go. Okay, I'll shut up now. I'm done with my rant. I actually feel a little better. Do you feel any better? Probably not. Well, thank you so much for listening and humoring me about these damn leaf blowers. They have got to go. Leaf blowers must end. Okay, let's get back on to real estate investing and go to our guest who's going to talk about Quad Cities. We'll see you this weekend in Phoenix at our event, and maybe you can propose your action plan to outlaw leaf blowers in your city. We'll see you this weekend, and let's talk about the Quad Cities. Here we go. Hey, I'm here with our local market specialist for a newer market of ours, and that is Quad Cities. And first, let's ask him to define for the listeners, what is Quad Cities?
Hey, Jason, it's great to be with you. Yeah, we get that question a lot. You know, what is the Quad Cities? Obviously, four cities together. It's on the Iowa-Illinois border. So it's Davenport, Iowa, Moline, Illinois, East Moline, Rock Island, Illinois. So it's those four cities there together in on the border of Iowa and Illinois. It's actually right in between. It's about 2.5 hours east of Des Moines and 2.5 hours from Chicago. So right in between those two, right on the Mississippi River.
So I guess, a good way to also define that is to ask the question, if someone were to come and tour your market, what would be the airport? What would be the best airport they would want to fly into?
Yeah, great question, Jason. Moline, Illinois actually has an international airport. So major airlines fly into Moline itself.
Okay, fantastic. So tell us a little bit about why this market should be attractive to investors. We're going to, talk about major employers, that sort of target tenant, that avatar for a tenant, if you will, and prospects for growth and landlord friendliness and all of that kind of stuff. So just start wherever you want with those topics.
Sure. Well, and when I think about it, and I've been in this space for about 16 years, literally, talked to thousands of folks about real estate investing, own a lot of rentals myself, as does my partner, Matt. And for me, when I think about, buying a rental property or investing in real estate, I think about cash flow and I think about steady. And, that really defines the Quad City. So I call it a steady Eddie market, meaning, you know, when the world ended in 2007, 2008, and some markets were, you know, depreciating dramatically, the Quad Cities barely saw a blip. And so it's a very insulated market. So you're never going to see 20% appreciation like you do in some places, but you're never going to see a dramatic drop either. So it has that steady Eddie quality to it from an economic standpoint. And then as far as a demographic, I actually don't live in the Quad Cities, but I partner with Matt there, and I invest in the Quad Cities because the demographic there, comparable to a lot of other Midwest cities, and I'll use Kansas City because that's where I'm from, but a lot of these other markets, you'll have a portion, if you will, of that market that have amazing cash flow properties from a number standpoint, but the demographic, if you were to walk down the street in some of those areas, would be a little bit, I don't know, not as comfortable. We'll just put it that way. And that really doesn't exist in the Quad City. So it's one of those markets that not only is a steady Eddie, but the actual demographic of the people that live there, very blue collar, very, you know, for lack of a better term, Midwest, but there's not a scary part of town. We take people there all the time. And when we're walking down the streets in these cash flow areas, people are amazed at just the demographic and the feel of the town itself.
Talk to us a little bit about that kind of avatar, if you will, for a tenant, that target tenant. You mentioned that blue collar, what kind of job might this person have?
Yeah, great question. So, and that a lot of that relates to also what we pick as tenants, meaning we have a high standard of who we pick for tenants. So it's a very, the Quad Cities has a very low rental demographic anyway. So it's less than, I think, 35% are rented. So it's a high owner occupant demographic anyway in that, in the whole metro. But when we're screening for tenants, we're extremely picky as well. For example, and my partner and I, we literally have called dozens and dozens of other property management companies, and we found about the average income ratio to rent is about 2.5. Well, we're at a 3.5 income to rent ratio.
So explain that a little bit for the listeners. What does that mean? Like, give an example. What would their income be and what would the rent be of the property they could rent?
Yeah, sure. So a specific example would be the average tenant out there typically has to have a 2.5 income ratio. So if they had a rent of $1,000, you know, you'd have to at least be making, you know, let me back into the math here. I don't have a calculator with me. I apologize. But
yeah, sorry to put you on the spot there.
That's okay. You have to be making at least $400 to be able to rent for $1,000. Okay, so our standard is, you know, 3.5 times that. And we also, we've never found another property management company. There may be some out there, but we've never found any that track even debt to income. And we track that as well. We won't accept anybody that has a debt to income that's over 43%. So we actually, a lot of our local bankers and folks even come to us and say, it's kind of crazy what you guys require at tenants. These folks could easily qualify for buying a house. We have actually a FICO score limitation we put on people as well. They have to have 2 landlord references. We verify income. We get pay stubs. We get income returns. So, you know, no felonies. We do the typical background check. So there's no sex offenders, no felonies. So the average tenant that we have, I mean, it's a nurse. We're talking about a qualified RN. There's a large demographic there and some huge hospitals in the Quad City. So a lot of nurses. And so when I say blue collar, these are individuals that are making, you know, $50,000-$75,000 a year. They just happen to be renting. Most of them are well qualified, and especially in today's market, could actually be buying property, buying a home instead of renting.
Okay. So why don't they buy? This is a question that has often been explored by our investors. And of course, we have a lot of thoughts and opinions on that, but you tell us what you think.
Yeah, it's a great question. Some folks, you know, just don't want to buy. I know a lot of them, as we talk to them, they just have always been taught, you know, they'd rather be flexible and they don't want to get bogged down, if you will, into a house. That's a great question. I really don't know the answer to that. A lot of them, in fact, the number one reason why somebody, we have an average stay of about 2 years on our tenancy, but the number one reason somebody ends up not renewing with us actually is to buy a property. So I think a lot of it is either they're not educated, they don't understand they could buy a property, even with the more loosened up lending, you know, in 2020 or in 2016. I don't know. It's a good question. A lot of them end up doing that eventually, but some folks would rather just rent and have the flexibility, I guess, than being tied into one house. Some are in transition. Some are recently divorced. We have a lot of professionals that have, you know, maybe recently just gone through some life changes or something like that. And so it's a, you know, a 1 to 2 year short-term situation where they're renting.
Right. And so we have a lot of tenants that want to preserve mobility. And I always say that the best thing you can have on a resume is mobility, the ability to move to where the jobs are. So certainly we serve tenants as landlords in that way. For sure, because, you know, they've got a 1 year commitment, maybe it's a lot easier than trying to sell a house. So that's for sure. The other reason we talk about a lot and we've explored in depth is just what we call financial immaturity. And you alluded to it when you said maybe they're just not educated, not aware that they can buy a property. But some of them, you know, I remember when I first got into real estate many years ago and I was selling to traditional first-time buyers, and they'd always have to take a step back so they could take 2 steps forward. And, you know, a lot of them didn't want to do that. They want instant gratification of having the best place they can possibly afford. And, you know, they don't want to do any fix-up work or anything like that. And a lot of homes in that market for the first-time buyer market that make a lot of sense are good fixer-upper type properties. So there's some issues like that. And it requires some saving if they're going to do a down payment and so forth. And just kind of more commitment, you know, less gratification. So there are many reasons. We used to have this big giant list of reasons we made for that years ago. I should find that somewhere. Okay, tell us about, you know, some of the employers and, you know, what the prospects are for growth and other development in the area and so forth. Just, you know, attractions, entertainment, all the stuff that would add to quality of life for people.
Sure. In the Quad Cities, I mean, the number one employer is John Deere. We've all heard of John Deere. So the world headquarters of John Deere is in the Quad Cities. Rock Island Arsenal. In fact, there was just a movie just out, War Dogs. I don't know if anyone's seen it, but I saw it. And in the movie, it talks about the Rock Island Arsenal because it's the number one arsenal in the U.S., which is obviously a huge deal. So like when the White House, they just recently wanted a new gate put up. Well, that was put together at the Rock Island Arsenal. Jeeps, you know, they're put together for the medical staff and the Army. All that happens in the Rock Island Arsenal. So those are two significant employers there. I talked about healthcare, some very large hospitals there. There's a lot of universities, Alcoa, Hy-Vee. So there's a lot of steady, industry there, even though it's a smaller metro. I think it's 430,000, the entire Quad City metro. And also there's even, you know, we're 2.5 hours from Chicago, and Amtrak actually just is, they're putting in a line that'll go directly from downtown Chicago straight to the Quad Cities. So a lot of these folks in Chicago who deal with the traffic, you know, it's literally 2.5 hour drive for them on a commute. There's going to be a line straight from Amtrak right downtown to the Quad Cities. And then, you know, that
should be. Well, tell us a little bit more about that, because that's a big deal. First of all, how long would that take on Amtrak, and when will it actually happen?
It's going to be finished in another 18 months, so we're talking 2018, and it'll be 2 hours. So it'll be 2 hours from, you know, that stop in the downtown Quad Cities to Chicago. A lot of these folks, as you know, want to get out in the suburban anyway, and so there's a ton of new construction right now in the Quad Cities. If you went there, and we're talking Midwest numbers, I mean, but there's $400,000, $500,000 new construction homes as far as the eye can see. Because there are just a lot of folks that literally want to get out of the larger metro areas and be in a smaller town like this, because it's good industry. It's a nice, you know, Midwest town. But that certainly, that connection to Chicago alone through Amtrak, we would anticipate, you know, that type of a demographic of professionals. Again, somebody making, you know, decent money in Chicago, you know, making a couple $100,000. I mean, you know, living in the Quad Cities, you're a very big fish in a small pond with those kind of numbers.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, good. Let's talk a little bit about, well, do you want to talk about employers or development or prospects for growth anymore? I kind of got off on the tangent of the Amtrak a little bit, but did you finish that? Or there's probably more, right?
Yeah, I mean, again, John Deere's, you know, a top 500, you know, Inc. 500 company. Certainly Genesis Healthcare is one of the big healthcare employers. The Rock Island Arsenal, I mean, you know, not to get into politics, but that's not going anywhere, you know, with recent activities, wherever you're at, the military is content. That's the number one arsenal in the U.S., and so that's a very large employer. Cone Elevator, you know, a lot of folks have heard of that. That's a large employer. And all of these are expanding. All these companies are hiring. Casinos.
I don't know, though. I the elevator business really has its ups and downs, though.
Yeah.
Really bad humor here, folks, on this show. But yeah, I had to throw that in.
Yep.
Okay.
Casinos. Actually, riverboat gambling actually started or was invented in the Quad Cities of all places. So riverboat gambling, in fact, there's just a $1.5 billion casino that was just put in the Quad Cities. So that whole casino industry, ironically, is a steady employer there in the Quad Cities as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. Well, good stuff. So let's talk a little bit about the landlord, kind of the regulatory climate, if you would, whether it's landlord-friendly, if it's anti-landlord. I mean, you know, we certainly know it couldn't be any more anti-landlord than the Socialist Republics of California or New York. Those are very anti-landlord. Yeah, you know, give us some feedback on what that's like. You know, what it's like if you get a bad tenant there, what it's like to evict them, what percentage of the market maybe that you deal with, if any, is Section 8 or government-assisted housing in any way. Just give us a feel for that.
Yeah, very conservative from a fiscal standpoint and political standpoint. So very tenant-friendly, landlord-friendly laws there. So it's really a three-day notice, and it's easy to evict. Now, we're right now running about a 2% vacancy. So it's, you know, we'd rather be proactive and screen very heavily up front so we don't deal with a lot of that. But certainly if it comes down to it, a very landlord-friendly laws on that side of it. So it makes it easy for us.
And okay, but vacancy doesn't determine landlord friendliness. I mean, right? Do you need to fill that in with some more information?
I was just going to say, we try and avoid dealing with tenancy issues or, you know, eviction by being proactive up front. So we don't have a lot of that, but it should come down to that. It is friendly. There's another question you asked that I was trying to remember.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I remember either, but, you know, just want to understand that climate. I mean, you know, when you have to evict someone, God forbid, hope you don't, but it's just statistically going to come up in every real estate investor's career at some point. Tell us about that process, if you would. You know, how long does it take? How much does it cost? You know, I want to kind of outline some worst case scenario stuff here. And then government assisted housing. That was the other question I asked, by the way. Yeah, what percentage of, if any, do you have of that?
Yeah, that was the question. We don't have any Section 8, so we just deal with conventional. Don't really need to have any Section 8 or government housing, so we don't. But as far as the eviction, on the rare case it does happen, we're usually at a 30-day turnaround on something like that. So it's almost a moot point with the level. I could find out how many evictions we've had, but I know it's a very low number for how many properties we have.
Tell us about that target property. You know, I asked you a little bit about the avatar for the tenant, but what's the typical property like? Like average price of the property, average rent, kind of the configuration, the age of the home, et cetera.
Yeah. So our average property is somewhere between 75 to 90,000. We have some that are over that. But for our cash flow investing clients, that's the typical pricing. And then rents are going to be anywhere from 800 to 900 on that type of a property. Age of the home, I mean, we have some properties that are upwards of, you know, 1950 builds and newer, but the actual age of the home for that $75,000 to $90,000 property, they're older homes. These are, you know, 1910 to 1940 built. And so we go through and the cash flow clients that we deal with and investors, once they see our scopes of work and understand that we've done a complete overhaul, meaning we're putting $25,000 to $30,000 on a rehab, all new HVAC, all new plumbing. So functionally, these houses are brand new. I mean, they're 2016 houses, but they're these older homes that have literally, you know, stood the test of time. They're these solid old brick stone built houses. Once our investors understand they're getting that solid of a house, with the brand new guts, if you will, a complete rehab, and then the numbers that, you know, play out for that, they're pretty excited to have that type of a property. But they are typically older homes is what our investors skew towards to be able to get the better numbers.
Right, right. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about that typical rehab that you do. You said brand new systems, brand new HVAC. I mean, if you acquire a property that's got a five-year-old furnace in it, for example, are you yanking that out and replacing it with a brand new one every time?
No, and it's rare that we have a property that has a five-year-old HVAC system.
Fair enough, but I just had to ask. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the policy on HVAC? I mean, it won't always be new, right?
No. Typically they are. So I mean, obviously the cosmetic stuff. In fact, I'm just looking over the last five or six scopes of work that came across my desk today, and they range between $22,000 to $35,000. So completely cosmetically new. Usually a brand new HVAC, and we have licensed plumbers and licensed HVAC on staff. So we're able to get this done with very good pricing because they're actually employees of ours. We're not outsourcing this to someone else. So we're able to accomplish this and still do it at a reasonable cost. But typically brand new plumbing out to the street, brand new HVAC, certainly new cosmetics from the, you know, complete redoing of the cabinetry, carpet, everything. Windows, a lot of times, are completely done.
Okay. Generally, like, do you want to share maybe what your average cost of a rehab is?
Yeah, I would say it's right around that $25,000 for a rehab.
Yeah, okay. And that's your typical rehab. Okay. What else do you want people to know about either the market or the rehabs? Do you use what kind of flooring, what kind of paint? And I'm not talking about necessarily what type of brand, but, you know, just any of your philosophies on how you do your rehabs.
Sure. Well, yeah, what I would have them know is everything, number one, is in-house, meaning we in-house acquire the property, we rehab it, and then we tenant it, and we deal with the property management. And my opinion on property management, that's the key to everything, meaning...
Oh, yeah. That's where it lives or dies, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's been our experience being on the other side of it. So for us, the fact that the left hand knows exactly what the right hand is doing and we're, you know, congruently managing that property from stem to stern is a big deal. And on the property management side, we literally take zero profit out of that, meaning even though we have 15 employees on staff, even though we're, you know, managing hundreds of properties and we, you know, have done over 1,200 properties right there in the Quad Cities, we never take a penny out of the property management side because we're always pushing costs down to create a better experience for our clients. We'd rather sell them more properties than, you know, try nickel and dime because we've been on that side of it. Even, you know, $25, $50 maintenance here and there, that adds up. So we're always pushing down on the property management costs, and we do all of that in-house, which is, you know, in my opinion, a big deal.
Let's talk about management fees a little bit. Yeah, you mentioned that you don't take profit on the management company. What do you charge as a percentage for management? And then, you know, what are some of the other charges in terms of lease-up fees and just the whole shebang?
Yeah, 9% is what we charge across the board. Lease-up is half a month's rent. On a renewal, we don't charge anything for a renewal, which is a big deal. We keep a ratio of 50 to 1, 50 houses to one employee, which we're pretty proud of that number, which is why we have such a large staff. Again, we create a situation where we literally have one staff member. All their responsibility is a relationship manager. We're actually proactively calling out to each one of our owners every month, walking through proactively their statements with them, seeing if they have any questions. And so we like that, not only handling the property well, but also our other clients, you know, our owners, and proactively reaching out. And you have a one contact relationship here with our relationship manager. And so there's never a question of, you know, where to go and what to do, because we're actually reaching out to you every month on that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you charge a markup on repair fees? I mean, you have some of this staff done in-house, but I assume you got to outsource some stuff. I mean, you know, it'd be very expensive to have experts for everything in-house, right? Or tell us about that.
Well, we literally are, with 15 employees, the great majority of it is done in-house. That's not to say some of them might have some independent contractors, but everything from any kind of maintenance issue you can name, it's typically done with our in-house, and it's a licensed individual from, again, HVAC, plumber. We don't have to. It also goes to how quickly can we respond to something. When you have a plumber and on staff that works for you, you know, we're not waiting for somebody to get out and take care of an issue should something arise, or HVAC or anything like that. I mean, there are employees. So the response time on that, again, it's all handled internally, is much quicker as well. So it does get expensive, you know, which is, you know, we charge a 9%, which is a pretty standard fee. But we just return all those dollars back to the model to be able to maintain that kind of staff.
So in other words, though, in your model, you have to decide on what those repair costs and service call fees are. There's not a markup since it's your person doing it, but you're certainly charging the investors for that. It's always a question of which is more efficient. You guys have definitely found it to be more efficient to not deal with outside contractors, and you have enough volume that it just makes sense to have all those people in-house, right?
Yeah, it's a volume game for sure.
Absolutely.
And even on the, when somebody's licensed, as you know, we get a discount on pricing. So when we're buying equipment, we're licensed, so we get discounts there, but we don't sell. We don't resell to anybody. But we get a discount.
And when you say license, do you mean contractor's license? What license are you talking about?
I'm talking about plumbers, HVAC.
Oh, okay.
They're licensed.
Right, absolutely. Okay, good. Good stuff. What do you do about late fees on the management side? Do you keep those, or do you split them with the owner? Some property managers do that kind of differently in different places, so I'm just kind of curious about that. They're always asking me.
Yeah, we keep those late fees. Everything's due on the 1st, late by the 15th. And
and what do you charge? Is your late fee a percentage, or is it just a flat dollar amount?
It's a flat dollar amount of $50.
$50. And then what about every day after?
It's just a flat fee.
That probably takes them till the 5th, I assume, right? Okay. So it's just 50, and then you go from there, and if they don't pay, it moves to an unlawful detainer type of thing.
Correct.
Right? Yep. Yeah. Okay. Good. Good stuff. Okay, good. Anything else you want to share as we wrap it up?
Yeah. One thing that we have a lot of investors that come to work with us understand the power of the Quad Cities is private banking. And we were talking a little bit about this offline. But
oh, yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, I forgot.
A lot of individuals believe that they're capped, you know, at 10 or maybe 20 rental properties because everything has to be Fannie Mae or Freddie Mae backed. But the reality is, the Quad Cities is one of the most competitive banking markets in the U.S., and so we have a lot of local banks that work with our investors, and they'll do what's a portfolio loan, meaning it's kept in-house, it's never sold on the secondary market. So those are decisions that are made by that local bank, and those are, you know, kept as in-house loans. And the benefit to some individuals who have, you know, good credit scores is your credit isn't getting dinged. And I'll use Matt, my partner, as an example. He has over 400 properties. Literally two of them show up on his credit report, and they were the first two he bought back in 2005, I think, because he didn't understand this. And so you're not limited on how you can purchase and invest over time. You're not capped at a 10 or something like that. And these local banks are very competitive. And so with our relationships and them understanding our team and what we've done there, having done over, you know, again, 1,200 properties just in the Quad Cities, they love to work with our investors, get them in. Typically in today's rates, it's 20 to 25% down, and the rates are right at conventional, maybe a quarter point more. So, you know, today we're at about a 4.5% rate on those. Typically they're a 20 to 25 year amortization is the typical situation on those. So that's something our investors enjoy if they want to have a substantial portfolio. They don't feel like they're capped at 10 properties or such.
So 20 to 25% down, right? Or 25% down, did you say?
20 or 25, depending on the bank.
Okay. And these are local community banks that are actually funding the loans, right?
Correct.
Okay. And you said 20 to 25 year amortization. So those are amortized loans. And those rates are really at typical Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac rates? It's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah. Right now, I mean, we just did several in the last month that were right at 4.5, 4.75.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. it's good. Good stuff.
They're competitive.
Very competitive. Yeah. Good stuff. Okay. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to seeing you at our next event soon. And I know you'll be speaking at one of our upcoming events. And we will look forward to doing more business together. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jason.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.